Welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. Listen in as we discuss all things business, growth, and marketing with business owners, thought leaders, and entrepreneurs. And now, here's your host, founder of Roundhouse, the creative agency, Saul Edmonds.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. I am speaking with Brendan Gibson from Inspired today. Brendan, how are you?
Fantastic. How are you?
I'm really good. It's a lovely day. It's a lovely day to have a podcast with you.
Isn't it raining outside?
Yeah, but it's still lovely. It's cooler. It's cooler. It's not humid, but it's mainly lovely because I'm inside chatting with you, Brendan.
Ah, lovely, man. Thank you. Likewise, it's fantastic. And it's not the heat. I stepped outside on the weekend and just dripping with sweat. It was
I know, not fun. Right? No, it's been kind of crazy weather. For people who don't know what we're talking about, who are in another part of the country or part of the world, we're in Brisbane and it's been really wet, really humid. So now you know. And Brendan, before we get into the main part of the podcast, for people who don't know about you who haven't been exposed to your fame as yet. Why don't you tell them a little bit about just like a short sort of history about who you are, what you do, and the short annotated version of how you got to be where you are currently?
Yeah, sure. Do you want to hear anything personally or mainly professionally?
Well, I'll leave that up to you, Brendan.
No worries. Yeah. First of all, thanks for having me on this podcast. It's really awesome to be here and to be asked. So I'm married to the wonderful Louise and we're about to celebrate our 20 years wedding anniversary.
Oh, good on you. That's awesome.
So I think she's pretty amazing. We've got three wonderful kids, two girls and a boy, and all teenagers. So, they're growing up fast. And, I've got that. Started my business called Answers IT in 2007. I just had finished up a role that didn't really work out and I was at a loss. What am I going to do? And that's when started Answers IT. That was in 2007. Sure, we'll go into this a little bit more, but in 2021, I merged with another IT company and became Inspired. Also got a couple of other businesses as well.
So 2007 was, just to clarify, that was like the proper start of the IT business journey?
Yeah, that's when I started the IT support company.
And so IT, I'm assuming, but you can correct me if I'm wrong, has IT always been like your thing?
Yeah, pretty much, other than serving people at McDonald's. Yeah.
Yeah, I used to work at Hungry Jack's after school.
I worked there too, but it didn't work out either. But Macca's did.
Yeah, the career path journey wasn't to your liking?
Of McDonald's?
Yeah.
No, it was a great way to learn, customer service and to treat people well. And
it's true. It actually is true. Yeah. Except if you, are just out the back putting stuff into the grill, then you don't really do any customer service, but
yeah, no, they had me in the drive through and the front and out the, I was sort of, did a bit of everything.
But it is actually true, that sort of stuff. I often think about, I only actually realized it recently that all the time that I spent throughout the years with my family, because we had some corner stores and things like that, and my dad was always, doing kind of his own thing as a courier and driver. And I realized actually only fairly recently that all those things are kind of obviously fed into me thinking about having my own business because, and I never kind of, it never occurred to me previously. And I don't know why that my family, like forever, had actually been doing their own thing. And then I had somehow separated that off, but really, and then, you know, sort of running corner stores and doing retail. It's funny, isn't it? Like yeah. It's only at some point when you've got a different perspective, sometimes you have like these realizations.
Yeah. I had one of them the other day, Saul. And look, I apologize if you lose any like subscribers over this, but I was sitting chatting with my daughter, my middle daughter, and we were talking about my school and sort of how I reckon things have helped me today that happened back then. And so we're talking about my high school and I said, I was pretty much a geek. And I said, I'm so embarrassed to tell you this. And I said, I actually helped out in the tuck shop. And I get the free food at the end. Like, no, you didn't. Please tell me you didn't. So yeah, that was a bit of an embarrassing moment. The realization out of that, all jokes aside, other than the free food, you used to get these pork rib rolls. Oh, gee, they were good. But, you know, I'd help out here and there, maybe once a week or something. And the realization is I got to deal with a lot of people. I got to deal with a lot of moody peers. I got to deal with teachers. I was interacting with them.
Yeah.
In a quite a big way.
And you don't realize food order
and dealing with money.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's right. I mean, I used to between grade one and grade three, we had this corner store just down the road when at the Kelvin Grove Primary School and then high school. And, we had this corner store and I used to have like quite a sense of pride that I could give my mates free lollies, that they could come down to the shop and I didn't think about it. And fortunately, my mum, I don't think it was ever like a big deal, but I could just say, yeah, they, you know, it was like some form of currency, like early sort of, there was no barter, but I knew that somewhere in retrospect that I was buying some sort of ambiguous favors in some manner. Yeah. Not that I was like using it to my advantage or anything, but
yeah,
but it sort of was.
My family owns the corner store and I can hook you up with some Zappos.
It's pretty much like that. It's like, yeah, you want some of those like teeth, you know, those like things that you put in your mouth and then you eat.
I remember those.
Some snakes. Had some of those the other day, actually.
Or the normal snakes alive?
No, the teeth.
Oh, you had the teeth?
Yeah, yeah. I found them. I can't remember where it was, but it was in like, I hadn't seen them for years. And then I showed my son, I said, hey, check this out. And I put them in the stupid thing that you always do where you put them inside your mouth. And it was like, oh my God, that's incredible. You know, super contagious. Anyway, we digress. So tell us about, so your business, like one of the thing that jumps out to me, like when I've obviously spoken to you and, when you go to your website too, but is the emphasis on being proactive about the solutions that you provide. I mean, it might be like a no-brainer, I guess, to like a lot of people as to why that makes sense, but I think it's still worthwhile. It's like these things that everybody kind of thinks they know about, but I think sometimes they're even the things that are more important to keep reminding people.
Yeah.
About. So can you sort of speak to that? Like that's, whilst it's commonplace and common sense these days, especially, I mean, in 2024, like how much more, important is it than say even a few years ago or is it?
Yeah. I might just take us back to sort of my journey as in IT in terms of starting the business. So I started Answers IT because I was really passionate about smaller business, not really getting potentially the attention that they needed and the support that they needed. I felt like there was a gap in the market. And always incorporated security into our plans and making sure people felt safe, or did our best, I should say. But I reckon in 2018, before everything really, I think it was a couple of years later where it's really ramped up, is when it became a priority. So, and I can still remember 2018, 2019, my business saw absolutely copped a thumping. There's things that, you know, I'd taken too much money out. It, you know, it was a vulnerable time. And it's where I sort of got this book called Profit First, and I read it. I'm like, this is me, because I was ready to go get staffed and let's just go work for somebody. This is too hard. Business is hard already.
It is, it's hard slog. And
staff and managing clients and staff and making sure everyone's happy. A lot of the time sacrificing yourself for helping others. You don't look after yourself. So I read this book and it transformed my business. It turned the whole thing around. Within 60 days, I was cash flow positive. Within 6 months, I repaid all the money I'd taken, like over the years before that. And the business became in a much better state. That then brought on the, essentially implementing that into my now business partner's business. And then we merged in 2021, and his business was called Inspired Techs. Mine was called Answers IT. So we merged and became Inspired. And our focus was really to take that, that focus on security another level. And so all of our plans incorporated that, for our clients. So, not just being known for IT support, but finding new ways to help via security. An example of that, is like dark web scanning. So a lot of people don't even know about the dark web. And you said before that it's common sense. I don't think it is common sense. I think we're becoming more familiar with it. I think people personally are becoming more familiar with it, or they're becoming familiar with it when they're hacked. I had a close member of my family get hacked. Their Facebook account, Instagram gets hacked, and they're like, what do I do? And so there's just some simple things, and I'm happy to, like, I'll share them a bit later, some practical steps that I think is good to keep front of mind. But, you know, prevention is better than the cure, right?
Yeah.
You know, if you don't want to get hacked, we've got to get it sorted. So, and you, it's a battle. It's a daily battle. Just some rough numbers, based on a recent study, the average ethical hacker, right? So these are people that are hacking to help.
Yeah.
They're part of organization. Yep. They're here to help and they're here to hack and find out, the gaps and where problems are happening. They earn about 180K a year, Australian. Okay. I've converted it from US. Have a guess how much the criminal hackers earn.
I would say, well, I feel like you're going to surprise me, but
I'm putting you on the spot. Sorry,
mate. I feel like I'm being lured into a trap, but I think I would say, my first instinct is to say a lot more, like about, like, you know, 5-6 times more.
Yep, good guess. The average hacker is earning about 120K a month.
Yeah, right.
A month. The other one was a year.
Yeah.
So that's what you're up against. And so there's no guarantee way to protect you from everything, but you've got to do your darn best, right? So I was just recently speaking to a group of executives at the ANZ Bank. And so I went through a lot of this content here in terms of the dark web. What is the dark web? What's even on the dark web? And so There is a lot of forums, there's passwords that are being sold, credit card information that's being sold. There is some good stuff on there, but we're talking about the bad stuff. The bad stuff. There's a lot of you can buy hundreds of thousands of passwords, leaked passwords and credit card information for about $7 US.
Mm.
So they're basically like a nice big it's a nice big marketplace where people can buy credentials. Mm. And then what do they do with those credentials? They then try to hack in. So for example, Saul, if I was to do a dark web scan on your business, okay, I would be able to find out all the passwords that are on the dark web based on the places that we're scanning. Mm. And so we would find those credentials. Now, here's an example. Let's say you use Dropbox. Mm. Okay. Dropbox got hacked 2021, I think, as well. So the password that you use to log in to Dropbox, whatever that is, please don't share it. that got stolen when it got hacked. Okay. Mm. So that password, generally you would use elsewhere. The most common average Joe or Sally, they will use the same password. 40% of people use the same password across all platforms.
Mm. Mm.
So you got to think about now, probably got the cogs turning even more. Think of your password that you're using. Where do you use it? How many places? The second question is how many have two-factor authentication on them?
Mm.
So, you know, like your bank, you log in, it sends you a text or it uses a two-factor application to give you a randomly generated number. So there are a couple of things just to note. And so you've got that. You've also got people that are just – so once they have that password, they're going, oh, he works at Roundhouse. Let's smash Roundhouse in any way we can. We know what Roundhouse's location is. We know their IP address. We're going to try and expose what we can and hack. I remember having a prospect on the phone with me, and they said, "Oh, there's some weird stuff going on. We've got an email going to our CFO." from another staff member saying, please pay this amount to this. And what had happened is they had actually not had the proper security. This prospect didn't have the proper security on their email system. And while we had them on the phone, one of my team members was able to email from the CEO to the CFO saying, please pay Brendan hundreds of thousands of dollars. They all got very scared. And we obviously got the client, but that can happen. It's happening less, but it's
not out
there. Does that make sense so far?
Yeah, no. I've had some personal experience, and actually it was probably interestingly, I think it was about the start of COVID. I had some tiny it was quite a small incident where I realized some password had been leaked, was leaked. And I actually had that realization that I need to, like you were saying, like 40% of people have the same password. And that was me. And I'd been meaning, you know, like a lot of people, like you up, say you're going to do things and you forget and you're busy, to set up, I mean, a LastPass as like a thing, which now I, you know, have nice, long, completely unique passwords that I don't actually remember that I just use LastPass for. I mean, except for the LastPass one, of course. Yeah. And, and that's great. And I, you know, it was a bit of a chore at first, or it seemed like it was, but yeah. I'm just in the habit now, and it's no less convenient. Just use my Google, your authenticator app. Pretty much all the time, every day, because I have to deal with a lot of people's passwords like you do. Like there's, you know, hundreds of websites and, you know, and I changed like all of them. I changed all of them that, whatever it is, like 3 or 4 years ago. Yeah. Sort of overnight. And, but I mean, sometimes I'm sure you hear this all the time is that often some incident is the only thing that is the catalyst for something to happen, which is, you know, it's a shame, but it is true though. Is that your experience that is?
Yeah, there's two categories. You've got some people that they'll get hacked, and I've actually spoken to a few insurance brokers about this. They'll get hacked. They'll call their insurance broker and they say, "Hey, we got hacked. Are we covered for that?" "Oh, no, you didn't actually select that on your renewal." And then so they're like, and then the insurance broker will say, "Oh, would you like me to include that from now on?" And a business owner's response has been, "No, it won't happen again." So which is scary, right? So there's that one. Then the second, I guess, class would be they get hacked and they actually do something about it. We don't want that to happen again. They've stolen our IP. They've stolen our important information. They've got, because once it's out there, right?
Mm.
Mm. So I've been hacked. Someone's got my password. Someone's got information. It's out there. Mm. You know, just like the recent breaches in Australia where Optus has been hacked and Medicare got hacked and people are lining up getting their, it was Medicare, Medibank. And then people are lining up, Medicare. People were lining up to all the transport companies getting new licenses, right? So, because their information got exposed. So there are some things you can do. But yeah, that's what I've typically seen. And the people that make a difference, the people that say, "Look, we don't want that to happen. What do we need to do, Brendan?" And we can have that conversation. And I guess that's a couple of the things I'll share, in terms of what are some practical things you can do later on.
Yeah. So what is the, so I know there's a lot of, you know, talk at the moment, obviously about things like, AI and people's general, either mistrust, fear, interest. I mean, you name it. Like it's out there because it's a great unknown, like for a lot of people, you know, but rocket science. It's very normal for people to, you know, be suspicious of many things that they don't really understand. You know, that's really normal. But what say in 2023, 2024, in terms of the hacking context, have you seen any particular trends or things happening that relate to use of AI to increase or to exacerbate those sort of problems, like, you know, ways that people who shouldn't be doing certain things, i.e. hackers using that in like smarter ways that people should be aware of that they could do something about or I guess like mitigate like simple things that are gonna help?
Yeah. Look, with AI, I mean, hackers were already using they're already attacking servers, for example, and just smashing different passwords and different variations of that to try and break through people's systems, right? Now they've just gotten a lot more sophisticated. They've become a lot more advanced. So the prevention, I don't think, has changed.
Mm.
It hasn't really changed. The prevention there are more things you can do to prevent, though, and there's more platforms that are coming out to help with that. But remember what I said before? Look who you're competing with. Mm. You're competing with people that are earning, I've seen it, between 80 and 120K a month.
Yeah, and they've got a big incentive. They've got an incentive to do that. Yeah, I mean.
And they've got the time too, Saul. They've got the time.
Yeah.
With that kind of, you're like,
it,
hey.
It's a powerful thing though, isn't it? Like, you know, that. Because, I mean, yeah, it's interesting. I was actually just last night on, do you ever watch, Vice on, YouTube? It's like an interview. It's like a, I think it used to be a magazine too, but it's a series of interviews they do with like all different sorts of people, and they're often presented on the YouTube channel as generally anonymous. But I was actually literally last night, I'd actually seen this before. They were talking to a white hat hacker who was talking about what we're talking about, and it was they always put like a mask on or something, or they change their voice. They're like, it didn't actually change this guy's voice, and I think he would be able to work out who it was. It was a pretty big dude. I was like, that's not a very good disguise. But like, but anyway, if the bad actors in some state that had previously hired him find out that he talked on voice, he's going to be in trouble. But like he was talking about how he used to be a black hat hacker, and that I mean, it sounded pretty genuine to me, but that ultimately his conscience got the better of him, that he was doing these things. And at the end of the day too, I mean, there's only when you're a certain sort of person, unless you want to live a crazy exorbitant lifestyle, you know, having $180,000 a year is pretty damn good, you know. Yeah. Or if you're doing things, there's a bunch of channels I watch too, just on this whole topic, which you may have seen. There's different YouTubers who are hackers who take down various call centers and scam sort of places too. But it's interesting because I feel I know it's obviously justified for people to be concerned about these things, but I also like that there's this seemingly sort of stronger element and more conversation and more like proactive stuff that people like that actually, you know, are doing, using their skills to take other people down, you know, in that sort of way, and that there's enough of an incentive and sort of moral incentive, and then also so it's actually viable for them to do that. That seems to be happening more. I sort of like that. Like that's an interesting sort of trend that I've seen on YouTube specifically. I mean, like you sort of hear people talking about that more maybe than they used to. I don't know.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I'd love to check that YouTube channel you're talking about. And I think, I mean, you think about in your circles, how many people in your personal circles or business circles have you know that's been hacked or had their social media accounts compromised?
It's
quite a few. Frequent.
And then
let's just pick on the social media for a second.
Mm.
What do they have to do when they get hacked? They report to, say, Facebook or Instagram. Oh, we can't see any problems here or whatever, because the hackers changed the email address, the password, the recovery number, everything. They change it so you can't identify that it was even them anymore, like the original person.
Mm.
And so what people end up having to do is create an entire new account, all of their history, all of their selfies, all of their food that they've been eating, that's all gone. Okay. So now they have to re-eat the food. They have to redo the selfies to catch up with it all.
It's a terrible, it's a terrible price to pay.
But jokes aside, that is what I see a lot of as well. And people will contact me. Hey, what do I do? I've been hacked. Sometimes we can get it back, and sometimes, you know, you can work through it, but the majority of the time, no, they create a new account. They have to start over again. And it's a pain in the neck. And I think that's the same for business, right? Imagine for the people listening, imagine you come into work. Doesn't matter what size you are. Doesn't matter if you've got 5 staff, 10 staff, 1,000 staff. Imagine your entire servers, your network, your SharePoint, whatever it is that you're using for your files. It's all encrypted. It's been encrypted. They want you to pay a ransom to get that back.
Mm.
Don't want to. Some businesses do have to start again, or they close down.
Mm.
It will close your business down. But a lot of businesses will have good backup systems in. They'll have good threat detection systems in to prevent that. There's a few things that we do at Anspire to help our clients. And it's kind of a layered approach. Do you want me to take you through a couple of them?
I do, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so the first thing we'd recommend personally or professionally is you make sure that you get two-factor authentication on as
Number
many
one.
Accounts.
Number one.
As many accounts as you can. Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to stop. I heard a percentage once, but I can't remember what it is. I think it was on the Lex Fridman podcast they were talking about that. But in your experience, what sort of percentage of just simply having two-factor authentication would stop what amount of stuff that would come through otherwise? Like if you're, you know, a range, you know, if you're going to say a range.
I'd be guessing, but I would say between, I'd say over 60%.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. So that's like a really super simple thing that people have. You got any just on just to, I'm slightly stick on that point just for a second. Have you got any like personal tips or any just, I guess, helpful advice for people to think about that? Because that's such a simple thing and it's going to be super helpful. What would you say to people who go, oh man, it's such a drag, or, you know, I've got to get this and this. What would you say to them outside of just going, look, it's all the obvious things, it's going to, you know, give people numbers. What's going to be something good to convince them that of how useful that is?
Yeah. Well, it's like banks, all right? Why would you want to do everything possible you could do on your bank login or account to make sure your investment is protected? Mm. And so if you care about what, like, think about the websites that you guys log into each day. Think about those. Do you get prompted for a random generated number? Is it inconvenient? Yes, it is. It can be. But it's become quite common, I think. People expect that. I find the elderly are, it's harder to work with, for them to adapt it. But I've even seen, whether it's a text message, which is not as good, but whether it's that or using the two-factor, this, it becomes familiar. Yeah. So I think the question comes back to how important is what you're logging into or using to you? Even if it had your date of birth in there, like that's identity theft. People could steal your identity and then impersonate you. So the dark web scanning, that's only one component of what we do, in terms of part of our, protected plans. Just that alone, we try and extract. We try and find information. So we'd look up USOL. We'd see on this website, we've gotten your date of birth. We've got your first name, your last name, and your address.
Mm.
And so it tells us what has been exposed. And so with that information, I could probably sign up to a few things as you.
Mm. For sure. Yeah, that's right. I mean, it is surprising, I think, probably to people how easy that is. And once again, because, you know, it's not their concern, they're thinking about other things that they're doing, you know, and so it's not surprising that people don't really have interest in it, and they know it's bad, but they don't want to think about it because it hasn't happened to them.
Yeah.
So what are those, the other things, just to return to what you were saying, those other sort of things, there's two factor, and then what else?
Yeah, I was just going to say as well, I think people think, oh, what do we need to do to protect our systems and that sort of thing? But what do I need to do to protect my identity? You know, because I think that's a question people need to ask themselves, because you think, oh no, it's not a big deal. Well, it could be a big deal. And it could get you into some trouble. So yeah, I think that's, just to finish that off, I think that's
shifting. I just had a thought. Is it perhaps helping people to think to just sort of ignore like not ignore the technical part, but not to have that as the focus for why they should do it. It's these other things to go, oh, you know, these are things you should be doing, but just like put that off to the side as to the actual technical things you have to do to make that happen, and think about the repercussions if you don't. Like, is
yeah, because we need the technical part, right, to actually protect their identity. So they go hand in hand. But yeah, I just think a lot of people wouldn't even think about their personal information being identified.
Probably not. And but it's also, and the one thing that I hear all the time, which seems like one of the primary common things, is people saying, well, like, why me? Because I've had to fix up. Like, I think that's the first thing that jumps into my head, is that anytime we've fixed up somebody's site, who it's been on some other hosting, it's been hacked, and they want to move it over or try to fix it up and whatever, first thing is like, why me? And I always say, well, it's not actually often, you know, there's no personal thing, but that's the first thing people jump to, is like, why would they choose me? I'm just some girl average. Or guy.
They
go, well, it's not. It's you and like a million other people that they've sent all this stuff out to, and you just happen to have the little the door open in the street. It's like the opportunistic robber. Is walking up the street, and they go, oh, look at that. There's a window open.
I've got your address. I've got this sort of thing. Yeah, exactly. And then you have the authorities then knocking on your door going, hey, why are you doing this? Blah, blah, blah. It's a good point. I mean, it's like your home. You put security systems in. You wouldn't want your precious stuff being stolen. Think about what you're trying to protect. Not just your identity, but not just your files and your photos and your business files and anything that's proprietary. Think about protecting your identity as well. And most of the time, Saul, they'll attack personally to get into the business.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So that's the and people don't often put those two together.
But that's then the psychology of it too, because I know from listening to various things about hacking, especially on you listen to the Lex Fridman podcast at all?
No, I haven't, but I think I should.
He's pretty good. He's a mate of Joe Rogan's, and he's like a programmer and AI guy, but a lot of the conversations that he has with people on his podcast are about are often like software engineers and people who've been hackers or people, and like a huge range of stuff, but often very technical. And so, there's a lot of really great sort of insights on there about why, you know, or journeys that say people who've been, you know, sort of hackers have gone through and why they've done things in the first place. But then often the psychology of it is like a big deal. Like for people who are really, really, really good at it, people don't, I think, really understand, because our focus as the people who've been, sort of infiltrated, is this technical thing. But the reality for the people who are really, really good at it is they're very good at psychology.
Yes.
And I'm saying that because that ties into what you're talking about. The personal part is that they are very good, not just technically, but they're very good at understanding patterns of like human nature, why people do things, seeing patterns in stuff and, you know, exploiting them. And they're often not technical things. There's like a technical flow on that they do.
Yeah.
But like the initial thinking about it is just this like slight lateral thinking about, oh, you're getting in via this, likely password things. This person is, they got security on this, but they don't on this. Because it's a personal thing and they don't think it relates to their business. but then ultimately in some backdoor way it does.
Yeah.
Often quite easily.
Yeah.
And so,
that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. But so tell us some more of those other things were going to.
And I think just back to what you said, changing the psychology, how do we do that? So that leads into the next one. Mm. For businesses, if they're not doing phishing testing, Saul, then they really need to consider that. In my experience, what is a phishing test? So a phishing test is where a system will send fake emails that look just like the real thing. Microsoft, Gmail, eBay, Facebook, all of the services that are common, they'll send a fake email to, we'll send a fake email to the staff and the business owners and the executive. And then it'll basically, if whoever clicks on that and enters information, that comes back into the system. And then we have a chat. this is where we can see some real issues. People don't understand this. This is where we need to focus training on. So yeah. Then we have like a training that they have to do, like a little online quick course. Right. What would you do in this situation? You click that. Wrong one. Click that. Yep. Great. Green. So that's what phishing testing is in essence. And that we found has changed a lot of psychology.
Yeah.
What not to click on. And it's little things like looking at the email address, or most of the time where it comes from, it'll say, let's say it says, Brendan Gibson, from Brendan Gibson. It looks like it's me, right? Because the display name is Brendan Gibson. But if you look at the actual address by clicking, you'll see.
And look at the domain.
The domain might be abx.com.
I literally did that yesterday. I literally did. That's actually happening more, and I'm like, even me who's like so attuned to it all the time, like I'm always thinking about it. Even me, there was actually something from ANZ that actually came that came in, and it was really good. It was like very legit looking, and then they either don't bother about the domain at all, it's just like something completely different, or they've actually been clever enough to buy something kind of similar. So at first glance, for people who don't pay close attention, they're just like, oh, it looks like some ANZ type thingy. Yeah. And then they click on it, but it was like, it was actually quite good. And it was some other domain. It was like something like ANZ hyphen something, something. And
yeah, I've seen that heaps.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're getting, and some people just don't bother. It's just like, because they know people don't, like you said, they don't even look at it. And they just look at the subject line, the name.
Yeah, exactly. So it's about those kind of tests that really do make a difference. And then having that follow up course, little mini courses online, that stuff.
That's a great idea.
And you produce a report to the executive or whoever, the business owner, or the office administrator. Unfortunately, sometimes it is the CEOs and it's embarrassing. So you have to have a quiet word, obviously.
Yeah.
So that's probably the second one I would say is important. And a lot of businesses are doing it, but a lot aren't. So I'd suggest that people do that. The third thing which, that we would recommend is getting a cybersecurity scan done. Now there's different forms of that. It's a horrible word. You've probably heard of it. But it's called a penetration test. So we call it pen test for short in IT land.
That's very wise. That's very wise, Brenda.
Because it always gets a chuckle. So getting a pen test done. Now there's different pen tests. So one of the things that we do is we do a cybersecurity, a user pen test. So that's done by running a simple file on a few computers, and waiting 5 to 7 days for a report to come back from people that specialize in this. We don't specialize in actually trying to hack into different things. We use a system to do that. It's people that's all they do. So you've got that. That typically costs out there. You're probably looking between $2,000 and $5,000 for a scan. And so that just basically goes, where are the gaps? Okay. So you've got that one. And the external pen test, or the more involved one, would cost typically a starting point of $30,000.
Wow.
So most people won't spend that. I was speaking to a prospect last week and they spent that and it found the gaps. So we will do one of them. In short, it will grab passwords from the local computer. It compares those passwords to what's on the dark web. It compares to how many times they're used, which website they're used on. We can find out who's got admin access to this, the network that they don't even know has access. We will send a virus out of their firewall, of their modem, their router, and then we'll send it back again and see if any alerts get triggered. So that's very interesting, especially when you're doing it on prospects that already have an IT company. But yeah, that's the kind of cyber scan at a minimum we'd recommend, just to find out where the gaps are.
Yeah.
The third item I would suggest is making sure you got good backup. So let's say they hack you, that you get encrypted, it all goes pear-shaped. How long is it going to take you to recover? Do you have a backup that's sufficient? And most people think we just need to back up our files. But what about your emails? What happens if your emails got hacked? And you go, oh, that's on Microsoft, that's on Gmail. It can still get hacked. So how are we going to stop that? And so that's where, how are you backing up your 365 or your Gmail? How are you backing up your core files? So that's probably the third thing I'd recommend. And what was the fourth one I heard? Oh, I guess having good threat detection. Most people, when I say that, think that's just antivirus. Oh, I have the free one. Isn't that okay? Sort of, but I'm talking about threat detection that, let's say it detects a threat like a 0 day, which means it hasn't been out in the wild, this virus or this ransom. It came out today. They happen every few minutes. You can get a 0 day. So how do we stop that? So this is where this threat detection will actually isolate that machine, if it detects it, away from the network so it doesn't infect the rest. Mm. And then someone like us would be given the steps to then remediate that and fix that up. Look, without overwhelming everyone, that is probably, and the two-factor authentication, obviously. Okay. That's, think about everything that you're using, everything you log into on your phone or your PC or your Mac, and make sure you've got two-factor on it.
Yeah. I mean, it can actually be, I think once people just get into a habit, I think, this is just from my perspective about what works for me, and this might not be the same for other people, but I just know, because I guess like many people, you like busy, any extra little thing that you have to do can be like a real drag, especially if people aren't already technically minded and they really don't like it, which is like a whole heap of people. They really don't enjoy it. In fact, they're quite anti it. And then they, you know, in order to do something like that is actually, like for us, it might be like, oh, well, you know, you get into habit, but we forget that that's a big deal for some people. Like that's actually really like, it's hard. When you're in a certain mindset to always project yourself into how other people feel, but then, you know, it's why I guess I asked that question before about how do you, you know, psychologically, like, you know, convince or talk to people that that's important, to try to get the same feeling people might have if it's too late. And then they go, oh my gosh, like we should have done that. And like, how do you do that? And I mean, what you were saying before about the testing is great, because it just gets back to people having to experience it. So if they experience it without the bad stuff, and they get to, and I mean, is it true to say in your experience that even when that happens, like some people are still like, ah, it's not going to be too bad, you know, after that, does that still happen? Or do they usually, yes?
Yeah. Look, like I said, it's a mixed bag. A lot of people don't want to spend the money, and it, you know,
yeah, economic, that's right.
economic times have made people, I think, more reluctant to spend money. They think it won't happen again. Yeah. We've already been hacked. This is the worst it's going to get. Unfortunately, that is not the worst it could get. Just think of COVID, like when just think when COVID lockdown happened, and what was the biggest push there? That everyone could work from home. Businesses were spending money as much as they could to get that working so their business didn't stop. So as you just said, how do we then put that pressure on that they feel to put the prevention in place so that their business doesn't stop? And I think that's, I don't know the answer. The answer I have is that prevention is better than, like, being proactive in this space is definitely better than trying to fix it after the fact.
Yeah. It's a little bit like insurance, I suppose, too, is people going, it's like you can't, it's not tangible and you can't touch it. So for that equates to a lot of people, and I mean, understandably so, that equates to them not seeing value in it until then there's some, you know, that virtual or unseen thing has some tangible like influence on them. And like, yeah, I mean, you and I understand that, but still, like, that's still the reality of the world we live in. But say then too, because I know you talk about the manufacturing and engineering sort of industries too, and I would imagine that there's like maybe more than some other industries, there's that meeting place between software and hardware there as well, where, you know, software is running machines that, you know, if they don't work, it means they might lose, like, if it's like in like mining industry, like, say they might be losing some millions of dollars a day, you know. So I'll rephrase the question. I was going to say, how important is that? We know it's very important, but like I guess what things have you seen in those sort of industries that can happen from very simple things not being done, like especially then when you've got, like, you know, software that is responsible for hardware working.
Yeah. And so just back to the insurance thing, for example, if your machine, your manufacturing or engineering, if your CNC machine goes down, right, your core bit of equipment that makes whatever you're making, if that goes down, how much does that cost for your business without even a cyber attack or anything like that, without even being compromised? How much does that cost you, staff, you know, production? What are you not delivering to your client? How much does that push your schedules out? You know, a lot of contracts that manufacturing have with clients, they have penalties for not delivering on time. And the amount of manufacturing clients that we work with, they are on tight schedules. They don't have time for this. And so that's not even talking about them being compromised, their equipment being compromised. And so that's why I think it's important to have good systems in place that back up and that sort of thing. And and with the insurance, you can get business interruption insurance, right? That will be there. You can get cyber insurance. What does cyber insurance actually cover? Check your policy. Most of the time, it'll be paying for my time, our team's time to go in and resolve that.
Mm.
It won't generally be, there's only a couple of insurance companies, don't quote me, that in Australia that actually will cover the ransomware payment these days.
Right.
Most of them don't. Most of them just pay for a services provider like us, an IT support company.
Not surprisingly, they can't.
Exactly.
They can't predict what that's going to be.
Yeah, so it's, and no one likes to feel dumb, right? So you or I don't like to be made feel dumb and that sort of thing. And there is an embarrassment if something like that happens. You feel it. You feel, oh, my business is down. I can't produce. And if someone gets hacked, they're like, oh, how do we let this happen? So I think it's being real and going, right, IT company X, Brennan, how do you keep us, how are we going to keep us safe? To give us peace of mind. You know, our motto here, our why I come to work, why all my team come to work, is to safeguard our clients, to empower them to operate with confidence. So the question is for the businesses, can they operate with confidence?
And so when they, cause you talk about, disaster recovery plans then too, like you obviously have to have or should have, like to mitigate, hopefully when that never happens, but on the terrible day that something does happen, that you at least have worked out a plan with, someone like yourself about what you're going to do. But is it sort of true to say, cause I haven't necessarily given a great deal of thought to a disaster plan, but I would imagine that even the act of doing a disaster plan is going to be potentially the catalyst for getting the stuff you need to get done in the first place. If that makes sense, cause it sounds like the plan would be, you know, this is what happens like after something and you've done the other stuff before. But is it like, I would imagine that doing the plan in the first place lets you reverse engineer all the stuff you need to have done before that. Is that right?
Yeah, it's pretty spot on, Saul. I mean, going back to that cyber scan thing I was talking about as well, that certainly shows the gaps pretty quickly of okay, this happens. What are we going to do? What's our failover? And it prompts that reverse engineering, like you said. DR's a tricky one. If you're a small business, most small businesses won't want to spend the money on DR. What do I mean by that? Let's say you have a server. Most people will go, hey, I've got a server in the cloud. I'm using something like Xero, or I'm using something like that. It's all good, right? It's up to them to protect me. And most of the time that's right. And there's not much you can do to provide redundancy for Xero. Xero won't even let you back up your Xero locally, right? So there's a lot of risk there for any business using that. But we use it in our business, you know, but that's all your financial records. So they have to have top notch security, but there's other kind of servers like, the typical server on site, right? You used to have those servers on site. Many still do. Especially manufacturing and that, but yet you have a server on site. So if that server dies, like it doesn't power on, it just shuts off, it gets electrocuted, whatever it is, it gets hacked. What do you do to keep that business running? And the disaster recovery plan might be, okay, we're going to have another server in a separate building, air conditioned on site, or we're going to have a separate server in a different region in the cloud, in Microsoft Azure or Amazon. We specialize in Microsoft. So, I'll say Azure. Are you going to have another server literally ready to flick over and be that disaster recovery? But that's only one piece of it. Like, as you said, Saul, there's many different layers of what do you do if you can't get into the building? Like that is all incorporated into a DR plan. But a lot of smaller businesses might want to spend, I don't want to spend money on another server just being there in case there's an emergency.
Yeah.
But bigger businesses would definitely have that, with hundreds of employees.
Yeah.
In some way, because it costs a lot of money for them to go down.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's right. I mean, it does obviously equate to the amount you're going to lose plus how much you're earning. I mean, that's obvious, but at the same time, there is it true to say that, you know, even if people don't want to or can't, you know, afford that sort of plan or at least the implementation of their plan, it doesn't necessarily follow that they should do nothing, and that they could still do something that's not either I can't do the ultimate sort of thing. Therefore, I won't do anything. Like you can still go, you know, you can still do. I mean, I used to like heaps of people for many years, like, you know, years ago, I used to be pretty, lackadaisical about backups, but I've got like, you know, two actual off well, one tiered one that I do sort of every day of everything. And then at the end of the week, like have one that then I store sort of elsewhere that is from that one. So I've got my, what I kind of, I guess, refer to as my working one that I do during the day or at the end of every day. And then another one. And I'm probably going to, like, I've actually been thinking about it, I have like another one that I could put in like a fireproof box or something just on, because I was like, I've thought about it a few times. I was like, man, there's just so many years worth of stuff and it's all, but it's, I think I actually just had this realization. Once again, one of the things, you know, but for some reason it occurred to me in a different way the other day. I was like, it's all just nothing. It's all just, you know, information on a hard drive. It's all, but it's so tangible when it's on the screen and all this work and all this like IP and design work and people's and like mainly people's information that they rely on me because they don't often, you know, for whatever reason, heaps of people don't keep it on their own hard drives. They're just like, but they might lose it. I don't know. They're just like, oh, I can't find it, you know, and they, so there's all that stuff. And it was like, there's just so much of it. There's like countless years worth of data. And I was like, oh, I really need another one. I need like another. But I like that. I mean, that's for me, it's different because I'm what I'm doing and I've got so much more data. There's like, you know, however many terabytes and terabytes worth of information, but it's still the impact. It's no, the impact for other people's business is no less important because it's all just still important information that what would you have to do if you didn't have it, if all of a sudden it disappeared?
Yeah.
Like, what would that mean? What would that mean to you? Like, to run that through in your mind. I think it's like the power of a good story, right? It's like, you know, if you weave a story into or run through a scenario/story for people and go, okay, now you're the main character in the story, Joe Bloggs. This happens to you. Now just imagine in the story, you're wanting to do as the hero of the story, you have to come back from, you know, after the digital apocalypse that just happened to you. Like, what do you have to do to build up again? Like, just run through it in your mind. What did you have to do in the first place to do that, to get that? What was that process? Do you do all that again? Just to think, because people, I feel, because I'm just thinking from my perspective, but I think this is the case for everyone, is everyone relates to, they think differently when they start to imagine a scenario instead of just going, oh, that's terrible, you know, or that'd be a real drag. But that's really different to starting to imagine it in your mind, isn't it? Like when you go, oh my gosh, but I think that's really powerful, like to
go through that mind. Yeah.
It's the power of then asking questions, like of even not, you know, it's like the idea of going, instead of telling, like you obviously have to tell people about what you've been doing, but then going, okay, now I've told you this. Now just imagine, you know, that happens to you, or even just this one bit, you know, happens to you. How's that going to affect you? Because people will know straight away, because they're like, they're really good at their business and they know it inside out, and they'll go, oh, geez, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And we were just cleaning, you know, we came back from our Christmas break, my family and I, and, you know, you get that energy, you get that motivation I want to clean out parts of the house. We just want to tidy a few things up and, you know, a bit of a spring clean, I think they call it. Mm. So, you know, we grabbed the trailer, we started to look through things. And really it's a process of, do I need it? Do I want it? Do I bin it or donate it? Right?
Yep.
So need it, want it, donate it. And so you go through that mindset of everything. Mate, we had a trailer load. It's amazing the amount of stuff we held on to.
And I
even think back to I was looking through my files the other day. I had stuff from high school on there, my school drive.
Yeah.
Now, why do I need that? The only reason I'd need that is nostalgic purposes, to go and look back. Oh, let's show the kids, or the kids might find it when I'm gone, right? Oh, look at that. Mate, and look, data is cheap at the moment, right? You can buy hard drives. You can buy 2 terabytes, next to nothing, right? I can still remember only having like an 8 meg hard drive. It's come a long way.
I know, right? So, yeah.
So it's become, So I think that some of the mental, I think that it's no different to cleaning your house, the same with your data. And going back to your other thing, what's the middle ground in terms of what businesses, you know, obviously they don't want to have that extra cost of having that second server. What we do for a lot of clients is we have like another box on site. So let's say a smaller one, not a that's used there for the daily backing up their systems. But if something was to happen to the main one, we would be able to boot up that in under a minute, and we would get them working in a limited form. Mm. And so that gives the client some confidence, back to our why, safeguarding them so they can operate with confidence. Mm. And that's quite a cost effective way to do that for businesses of that size.
Mm.
But yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that like that unifying thing too about communications, I sort of find it important, which is why I think I saw it on your website, like you talk about your unified system, what's the terminology?
Unified the phone system. Yeah, that's unified communications.
Yeah, yeah. I mean that. I mean, I know for a lot of people they probably equate that to a really good CRM or things. But I know that's different. So can you just sort of, I guess, explain to people what that is and why, in the bigger picture, with everything we've been talking about, with having a proactive approach, why something like that for what you're providing to people is actually good?
In terms of security, in terms of the product, in terms of why we sell it, is that
just like the all things really, like just the benefit, I guess, that it just has in the scheme of everything you're offering to people.
Yeah, cool. So traditionally, phone systems, as you know, you'd buy the $30,000 or whatever it costs phone system on site. You'd have each of the physical phones with their old phone cable going into the wall, and that would be their phone system. Yep. It offered very little flexibility. You were locked into a 5-year contract or 3-year contract, and that's just what people did. There are still people that do that today. Businesses still operate that way. And so what we wanted to do, and look, there's many options out there, but we have 2 offerings. Our first option is our own phone system that we've got. It's got multiple failovers. We've got a lot of security in it. It's very flexible. We can customize the living daylights out of what people want. It's very detailed in what you can do. Like, I want it to go here, then this queue, and then if they don't answer after this many seconds, go back here. I want it to play a prompt based on like we can type in what we want to say, and it translates it to a real voice. Mm. Things like that we can do within our system, and give our clients easy access to reporting on that. What calls are made this day, and it's all in a web browser. That system, people could work anywhere in the world. They can work anywhere in the world on that, and they're not tied to a location. It just uses an internet connection wherever they are.
That's like a VoIP sort of thing.
Yeah, it is. It uses VoIP technology, and you can't tell. Look, I feel like a lot of businesses, or like most businesses, would use VoIP now. But the second offering that we provide, as you know, Microsoft Teams is very common these days. So you've got Teams, you've got Zoom. We use Microsoft Teams multiple times a day. Our staff just, they're on meetings all day, every day on Teams. Anyway, so what we've done is, and we've been doing it for a number of years now, we provide your phone system in Teams. So in Teams, you would actually have a call. There's already a call button there, but you'll be able to receive calls externally and make calls using the, you know, like a local number. So that just means you've got one application. You're not having to flick between different things.
Simplifies things, especially if you're doing it a lot.
And so that's the word unified. That's very much the use of the word, especially with Teams. It makes it a lot easier. We've got a client who has multiple offices. They have three or four sites, and they were an early adopter of the Teams system. It wasn't great. But in terms of phone call, in terms of what you could do, in terms of flexibility, it's come such a long way, and it's a really good product.
Isn't it interesting? It's interesting how events like COVID too can be like a crazy catalyst for things like leaping ahead. So it's funny because it's now like however many years ago, like a few years ago, and just seemed, I mean, I'm not romanticizing it, but it's like, it seems just like the other day, you know, that we had COVID. Because it does, but the things that happened, we were just talking about this at home the other day about some terrible event, like a bushfire, things come through, people are forced into a situation. But then for some people, that means, you know, sort of tragedy and bad things. And other people, it means great things. And for other people, it means both those things. It means they lose, the things are destroyed, but great things come out of it. Like, you know, I always, for whatever reason, I just always find it an amazing analogy because it always seems so apt to have a bushfire because everything's like charred, but then it creates all this sort of ash and all this like nitrogen in the soil. And it's actually the best thing like for future growth.
Yeah,
it always seems like the perfect, you know, metaphor for things like that. I mean, it doesn't mean it's great at the time. They go, oh my gosh, you know, like, yeah, I'm going to have a bushfire. You know, nobody ever says that, you know, there's like, I can't wait to have a bushfire, you know, but they, cause you'd kind of be crazy if you did, but at the same time, a lot of amazing things do come out of it. And I mean, if anything, you know, I'm sure I probably have like a million stories about people not doing stuff, then doing it, and then a lot of really good things happen in their business as a result of different thinking, right? You know, you were saying at the start, which maybe you can just sort of speak about a little bit now too, about, the profit first thing in your business and then how that led to coaching stuff that you're doing, like that, and sort of arguable to whether that would have happened if you hadn't had these other things. I mean, maybe not though, but maybe that wouldn't have ever happened.
No, that's good. So as I said, using this system really transformed my business, and then I was so passionate about it that then I wanted to help others, and so. For those who are listening who don't understand what Profit First is or haven't really heard of it, a lot of people would have heard of the Barefoot Investor. And so the whole idea is you have different bank accounts for different types of things. So Profit First has been around longer, but it's for business. Okay. Mm. Whereas Scott's Barefoot Investor was really aimed at the personal, the family, and that kind of thing. So what it essentially means is creating a number of bank accounts. So one for tax, one for profit, one for tax, one for operating expenses, one for owner's compensation, owner's pay, and one for the revenue account, money that's coming in and getting paid. And so what it is, it's about having a regular rhythm. So at the moment, every fortnight, we will do a transfer based on certain percentages that have been established in like looking at the profit and loss statement in the business. And so we'll have a number of percentages. So 15% might go to tax, or 20% might go to tax, 2% might go to profit. And you would do this every fortnight as a pattern. And what happens is those buckets build up, those bank accounts build up. Mm. And so owner's pay, for example, you would get paid out of owner's pay potentially as well as the salary. So the business starts to, you can see the business starts to reduce and starts to generate a lot of positivity. You can see where the gaps are financially. You need to either increase your prices, you need to lower costs, et cetera, et cetera. And so working with a profit first professional is really important, I think, in those. I self-implemented it for me. And I, like I said, I was so passionate. I wanted to help other businesses. So I specialize in IT companies because I like to help not just with the profit first, but hey, what are your metrics here? How can you improve your process? What are you doing for this, this, and this? And it can be really an experience share. On that. And what I'm doing this year is a lot of I'm starting the group coaching. I've been doing a lot of one-on-one, but now I'm moving into group coaching. So we really get like a bit of a mastermind group of people, IT companies. And yeah, so I think that's going to add a lot more value, hearing from one another, having, me facilitate that and bring the profit first piece to it. But yeah, and I've already worked with a number of businesses and I've seen their businesses transform as well. And that nothing excites me when doing that more than seeing the result that they're getting. And, but yeah, I've worked for hairdressers. I've done it for cafes, all sorts of businesses, but IT is the focus.
That's great. Yeah. I mean, it's true as much as it sounds probably to people listening like a cliche, but a lot of cliches are true that like when you do like, you know, put yourself out there like that and helping other people, it's very outside of it being very enriching for those people. Like it's super rewarding, but that learning process too, like even the side effect of I'm sure you probably have this experience of like you're talking, you're helping other people out, but then you know, having different sorts of conversations that you would otherwise not have, you know, with other people in your own industry, which in itself is always kind of nice. Like I always like that when I'm talking with like other designers, like it's really different because it's like they're your people and they kind of like other small business people. I always find like even in completely different industries, I always like find the most in common with, even if they're very different people.
Yes.
Because, and I've always found that I always like find a lot of comfort, like going to networking groups that you and I go to. And like, it's just even if you're not talking to people, just hearing people and you're going, Oh yeah, that's me. That's like, I'm not alone. I'm like, I thought I was the only one that did that thing. And they're like, oh, it turns out that there's like hundreds of people that do that. It actually makes you feel really good. But like, have you got, so as we're getting onto the tail end, I guess, of the podcast, like, have you got anything else that you'd like really like to, like share? We've covered like a fair bit of ground, but anything else in particular, you know, that you'd like to share, Brendan?
Yeah. I think even like just going over the different topics, I think what's, I guess, a bit of an action plan that I think's for, would be good is when you, for example, let's say you want to get fit, you want to feel better in your clothes, you want to, you know, you want to look better, whatever. It's the importance is getting consistent with the exercise, with the eating and being consistent at it. And so whether that's having that consistency around cybersecurity and identity protection and talking with, having your IT provider talk to you or you talk to them, what can we do more of? Being consistent and having that conversation, I think is really important. Being consistent in setting up that two-factor authentication, being consistent in having good backups, being consistent in phishing testing. You know,
I think that is the key. I think it's not too far a stretch to say, like, in almost all things, consistency is the key. Like incremental, not super crazy, always incremental, consistent seems to equal confidence, and it equals good results. It might not be as quick as the fast and dirty stuff. But which isn't always great. I think that's absolutely right on the money. And that's, and we talked about at the start too, about a amazing quote that you were going to share as well, or quotes. I think you already said one, but,
I'll give you a couple. All right.
Okay.
But so don't get hacked, get protected.
All right.
Don't get hacked, get protected. And the second one is prevention is better than the cure. If you don't want to get hacked, get it sorted.
Yeah.
So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And what's the best way? Like, we'll have a link in the podcast description too, but what's the best way for people to find out about you and Inspired?
Yeah. So obviously the contact us page on inspired.com.au is email. I'm more than happy for people to email me. It's just CEO@inspired.com.au. That's CEO@inspired.com.au.
Nice. Thanks, Brennan. Thanks so much. It's been a fantastic conversation. Really super interesting as always. I'm sure that there'd be stacks more to cover, but we've covered like some pretty cool stuff. So thanks so much. I really appreciate you being on the podcast. Super fun.
Thanks. No, thank you for having me.
And so with that in mind, everyone, that's actually it for today. Thanks again for listening in to the Grow Your Business podcast, and we'll see you again soon. Say goodbye, Brendan.
See you later.
See ya. See ya, everyone.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Grow Your Business. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time here at the Grow Your Business podcast.